This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Ready to go. It's Sharp Money on this Thursday from downtown Las Vegas, Bar Canada at the D. I'm Ben Wilson. Great to be reunited with Dustin Sweetelson here for the next couple of days while Patrick is still on vacation. You're back. Good to see you, man.
I'm back. It's going to be busy, and then we're going to get back together on Sunday, too. The band's getting back together for Live Bet Sunday, so a lot of me and Ben coming your way.
I don't think I'm here Sunday. I hate to break it to you.
What?
Right off the top.
Oh.
It's arena football playoffs. Our schedule's been in
everyone
flux.
Everyone knows that.
Everybody's betting the IFL right now, Dustin.
Wait, are you going to get to call a game in a New Jersey mall?
I would love that. As of now, no. That is the AFL, which is kind of a joke of a league. IFL actually has real stadiums. So
look at that.
They don't play in malls. But I will be calling a game this weekend, sadly. I believe the following weekend I will be with you, though.
Okay. So back together in 2 weeks. So I have to live my Sunday version of life with you today on Sharp Money.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Which that Sunday version is an unhinged version, which I'm always excited to have, at least with you today. I was impressed, though, traveling back here to Vegas yesterday watching Sharp Money, because I'm a company man. I do watch this show. Watching Dustin talk about, and everybody on the show talking about Francisco Lindor, little 50-1 shot to win the NL MVP. And then he goes out and he hits two bombs yesterday. Mets embarrass the Yankees once again. The Yankees ship continues to completely crash right now as they are now a game and a half back, potentially two back of Baltimore, depending on how their extra innings game goes right now against Miami. But Lindor's price is now 28-1. So first off, job well done on that, Dustin. But second of all, yet another series where the Yankees just look atrocious, one of the worst teams in baseball now over the past month and a half. And in a series as highly spotlighted as this one just was, it's funny, when you're facing, you know, these intra-division series like the Rays, people go, okay, this is just daily baseball. But when it happens against the Mets and it's your crosstown rival, all of a sudden that gets people talking, Dustin, as soon as you lay an egg in a spot like that.
You got to wonder, Brian Cashman, are children's children and children's children going to live in a world where Brian Cashman's still somehow the GM of the New York Yankees? I just don't understand how this organization that's the pinnacle of the entire sport of baseball can settle for the mediocrity that he puts out there. And you're going to say, hold on, Dustin, what are you talking about, mediocrity? It's Juan Soto. It's Aaron Judge. It's Gerrit Cole. You can make the case those are three of the top 5-10 players in all of baseball right now. No, it's the rest of the team. And that's what matters in baseball. We get caught up in football because football is so top-heavy. Baseball, we just saw the Atlanta Braves a few years ago win a World Series without their best player, Ronald Acuna Jr., who, oh, by the way, just won an MVP a year ago. So to think just because you have the one or two best players in all of the sport, that means there's success down the line. And it's on the GM to fill in those cracks. It's on the GM to opt to not give contracts to people who could hamper your spending down the road. And when I look at this New York Yankees team, I know a lot of people want to blame Aaron Boone. But the blame to me is Brian Cashman. This is not a roster worthy of being a World Series team as it's put together at the moment.
And yet, every single time it seems like the Yankees look competent for a 2-3 game stretch, the market immediately goes back in love to New York. They are still about a pick 'em if you're comparing them with Baltimore to win the division. Yet every single time, I feel like, Dustin, we've had this conversation over the last 6 weeks. It's been Baltimore, outside of the closer position, which we'll talk about in a second, clearly has the better roster top to bottom, clearly has the value on them to come out, win this division, get the number one seed in the AL, currently tied in the win column, Baltimore 3 up in the loss column heading into today, and Baltimore is an out away from beating Miami in a crazy game, 7-6 there in the 10th down in South Florida. But it's been the same conversation every time. And what will New York try to do to change that when you have to assume Baltimore at the deadline is going to go shopping and get an elite closer? Maybe a Mason Miller from Oakland. That has to be the conversation, as it hasn't changed in 6 weeks, and New York's done nothing about it.
Well, the difference is there's a core being built in Baltimore, and it's position players that throughout the lineup are actually going to get better because a lot of them are younger, right? Through more experience, they can improve. Whereas you look at the Yankees, it's a lot of veterans, and we know who they are at this point. And I just want to go through a couple of names here that Brian Cashman is responsible for, Ben, that I think he doesn't get held to the fire enough. The DJ LeMahieu deal, absolute bonkers, that he has gotten the money he's gotten on the back end, giving out a big contract. The New York Yankees should never act like they're desperate and they have to give you additional years and additional money. You should want to be a New York Yankee. He is holding this team back. The Anthony Rizzo thing is weird. I think that was just to keep Aaron Judge happy because they're friends. Somehow under his watch, Gleyber Torres has taken a step back as a player. Trading for Alex Verdugo like that was going to solve problems for this team. At the end of the day, you look at the Yankees lineup, and a lot was made of what Luis Severino of the Mets, who's pitching today against the Braves, made about a week or two ago about the Yankee lineup. There's only one or two guys in that lineup we're scared of. We can pitch around them. And it's absolutely true. You avoid Judge, you avoid Soto, you will win games against the Yankees.
I just think it's crazy, too, how then you get these spotlight series like the Mets. You get outscored by 22 runs in four games, over 5 runs a game, which you found the most being outscored by per game in any single season series ever. Now, granted, small sample size, but still, that to me, when you consider the history, consider the expectations, where we're talking about this team that is still favored to win the AL as it stands right now.
I don't understand that. Look, people don't, in our space especially, because we deal in numbers, right, Ben? We want to quantify our belief in something that can back up that opinion. There's a real issue, and I think baseball is like the sport where it pops up the most. We'll get into momentum later, but chemistry. I want to talk about chemistry now. Because chemistry does seem to matter in baseball. We've seen teams go on runs where all of a sudden everything clicks. There's nothing really different that happens, but players perform better. It's contagious throughout the lineup, and a good time, it breeds more good times. Like, that's what's happening with the Mets right now, and the opposite is what's happening with the Yankees. When things are bad, things stay bad with this organization right now. That is the issue I see. You can't put your finger on it. You can't quantify it. There's no formula for it. It just kind of happens, and that's what you saw last night. A Mets team, never say die, never scared, things going their way, and the opposite happening for the Bronx Bombers.
Mets have continued to be the most profitable team in baseball since June 1st. Yankees have been the worst, outside of only the White Sox, who are basically a Triple-A team at this point. Yankees tied for the second-worst record, 9-20, with free-falling Seattle. If you go back since June 18th, it has been polar opposites for the two New York teams. And as Baltimore does hang on for a crazy win, they were up 6-0 in that game, Dustin. Blow it. Miami comes all the way back to tie the game in the ninth. Baltimore wins 7-6 in 10 innings. I would go out on a limb, too, and say a couple things. If Mason Miller, particularly, who will be one of the most sought-after trade target acquisitions at the deadline here, if he goes from Oakland, who's had the best reliever numbers of anybody in the major leagues this year, just happens to be a closer on one of the worst teams in baseball, he goes to a team like a Baltimore, all of a sudden you give the Orioles another huge leg up, since that's really the biggest hole in their rotation and roster in general right now. And also, that becomes now a situation where Miller to win the Relief Pitcher of the Year award is not all that crazy, even though he's 5-6-1 second choice, well behind Emmanuel Clase of Cleveland. But it's probably the most frightening thing, Justin, is when you're seeing a team in your division one move away from making themselves clearly across the board better than you, and there's no immediate signs of taking action. That's what has to be the most concerning thing there on the Yankees.
Well, I'll add another layer to that. When you look at the Orioles, what they need to address, they need another starting pitcher behind Corbin Burns, someone who's controllable for next year as well, so they can go Burns, that other pitcher, and then Grayson Rodriguez in the playoffs. They need a new closer. Craig Kimbrell just blew his sixth save of the season. That's the most of any year for him since 2011, the second season of his MLB career. So those are two big needs for them. And maybe they need a veteran bat to come off the bench, Baltimore. That's it. That's what they're looking at. They have a very defined three, maybe four things that they'd like to add at the deadline. For the New York Yankees, I don't know what you think you're adding to get better. Some of the young kids aren't there. They're not ready yet. A lot of them are deeper in the minor league system. And I don't know what you have asset-wise that you're willing to give up on this year to add someone who can make an impact, because I think you need an impact in a variety of spots. You need more production out of first base. You need more protection behind Aaron Judge so teams don't throw around him, which is absolutely coming your way. Pitchers are about to pitch around Aaron Judge in every key spot going forward to avoid him beating them. That's also, by the way, going to hurt his MVP candidacy.
Just a little bit for Aaron Judge, who he, Shohei Ohtani, healthy favorites in their respective leagues right now. What was fascinating more than anything was Aaron Boone, who leads the major leagues in managerial ejections. And you don't really blame him with how so frustrating some of these games are. One of the most fascinating quotes from, we have a few of them, but the just in general on what needs to happen going forward from Aaron Boone, that's really the most telling, as you really look at where things go from here now for a New York team that certainly, while we may talk about how the sky is falling, the perception, they're still right there, at least in the division, will be a postseason team. Here's Aaron Boone after what happened yesterday and what has to happen going forward.
I'm not defining That's it. We got to play better. Okay. We have it right in front of us. We're a really good team that has played of late. We need to be better. I'm not going to define stretch this or that. We got to go win. Right. And we're right there. You know, we're watching, you know, other teams struggle around us. We know we got to be better. Okay. We got to, you know, we're pissed off in there. We got a lot of pride in there. We have a lot of expectation in there. So stretch, slump, recent, I don't give it. It's we got to play better the rest of the way. And it's right there. I've said it's right in front of us. It is.
Booney, not holding anything back. Love to hear that perspective. A guy who clearly is upset, and you wonder why.
I just don't think it's on him. That's all. Yeah. By the way, coming up in a couple seconds, Rays at the Blue Jays starting. I'm on Todd Bradley.
Bet.
Over 16.5 total outs. He's gone over this number last four starts. Last time versus Toronto was September of 23, 21 outs at seven innings pitched, and he's one of the hottest starting pitchers in all of baseball. A 0.35 ERA, 0.86 whip over the last month. I'm going to ride Taj Bradley.
You can get in on that still, even in game, because Bradley is yet to take the mound yet. They're in the top of the first, just got underway there, north of the border in Toronto. A lot more baseball talk for us coming up. We'll also dive into some NFL futures, some Olympic basketball betting with Stuart Durst coming up in about 20 minutes. But on the other side, we'll jump into some NFL news of the day, including early training camp thoughts from the Buffalo Bills. Where do they stack up in the AFC East? We'll discuss next as we're just getting underway here on the Thursday edition of Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the sports betting network.
The VSiN NFL betting guide is out now, and our all-new college football guide drops August 1st. That is a week from today, and only VSiN Pro subscribers get all the tools to prep for the college and NFL seasons. Our experts provide profiles of every team with advanced stats, trends, and power ratings, plus best bets on futures and season win totals. Sign up before the end of July and receive both guides and full VSiN Pro access to our daily pro picks, 24/7 video, and exclusive data like our betting splits all the way through the Super Bowl for an early bird discount price of just $175. The football special discount price expires July 31st, so do not wait. VSiN.com/subscribe to sign up today. VSiN.com/subscribe. Just getting underway. Sharp Money on this Thursday. Dustin has action. Taj Bradley over outs in the Tampa Bay-Toronto game. I'm surprised you did not have action. You didn't want to lay the three goals with the U.S. Women's National Team against Zambia today from Nice, Dustin.
Well, I am American, despite that being Team America. I refuse to ever focus on soccer in my life because okay. I am a great patriot.
Interesting. I should not be surprised, though, based on some of our conversations in the past.
I'm not going to like watch a sport where we're going to play like for 2 hours and it's tied 0-0 at the end. I think I've seen one live goal in soccer in my 39 years on this planet. I don't understand it.
That's an unders paradise. If you like betting unders, soccer is awesome for that.
It's melatonin on grass.
USA laying, at least at Circa, close three goal favorites with heavy juice. Total of four in that match for today. Scoreless through the first 15 minutes. I guarantee you it will not be 0-0 in USA Zambia. If that happens, that would be stunning.
All right, where is Zambia? What borders Zambia?
I've been to, I've actually been through customs in Zambia.
Really?
Yeah. On the way to Zimbabwe.
Get patted down?
Well, they had one of those weird, like, if you had you had to do your suitcase through one of the scanners, but it was, like, in a tent, and it seemed like they were just checking for drugs more than anything. But if you had medication, your bag would get, they would look through the medication, which was just, it was weird. It was one of those, they were like, yeah, that bag looks suspicious, we're going to check it. Or that bag looks okay, you're just going to have it sent through.
All right. So for those like me who want to know where Zambia is and it's next to
I just told you, Zimbabwe.
Well, Zimbabwe's one. Angola's another. I only know that because of the 92 Dream Team.
Hey, by the way, U.S. Women's National Team just scored a goal as we're talking.
Of course they did. Tanzania, Malawi, and
Malawi, I believe.
Mozambique.
Mozambique is how that is pronounced.
Yeah, of course, you would know.
Well, you did a pretty good job.
Yeah. I've heard of two of those countries.
You've heard of two of them. One because of Charles Barkley.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you very much. 1-0 to
also,
the U.S.
Also, I thought
US
Tanzania was in Australia.
That'd be Tasmania.
That's the one I'm looking for.
You were close. geography with Dustin Sweetelson today on today's edition of Sharp Money. Also, your NL Cy Young ticket on Dylan Cease that you had crumpled up and assumed was dead might still be 35-1, but he has thrown a no-hitter through 8 innings and only has needed 103 pitches. I assume he will get sent out to at the very least try here in the 9th inning for San Diego, up 3-0 in Washington.
All right, well, let's have this conversation, because San Diego Padres are a potential playoff team here, right? And they've had issues at staying healthy in the rotation. Musgrove's been gone at times. Yu Darvish on the IL at times. Like, and that would be the strength of this team, minus Juan Soto compared to a year ago. I'm going to be the wet blanket. I wouldn't put Dylan Cease back out there to throw the 9th. I wouldn't risk it. There's too much on the line. Or maybe he'd have a very quick hook if I don't like the way things are going. I just think you need to rely on what your strength is come the playoffs, because teams can be built better for the playoffs than they can be in the regular season. I think when you look at the San Diego Padres, they're a team with that three-headed monster. If they're all healthy, they're all ready to go. I give them an edge over most other rotations in a short series.
I don't understand why approaches in these situations like you're talking about, it's not just, hey, you're at 103 pitches. Go out, look, just groove fastballs right down the middle. If you get through it,
sure,
great. But we aren't going to risk you throwing like a 30-pitch inning to grind through it. No nibbling. And the second you give up a hit, which likely if you're doing that, it's going to be early count contact, we'll pull you. But that's how, like, that's a great little in-between way of approaching it that no teams ever do, because teams don't want to think that way.
And a no-hitter is not special. Let's stop pretending it's something that's special. It's cool. It happens, but it happens a lot lately. Like, there are a lot of no-hitters. If you had a perfect game going, maybe you could convince me, because you're joining a very small list of people in baseball history. But a no-hitter, no, we're not risking our goal of a World Series here. Deal with it.
I still think it's special, but, you know.
It's not.
That's just the little kid in me that's like, a no-hitter.
It's not. I get it. It was special when we were a kid. It just feels like it happens a lot more with the way the approaches have changed at the plate, and both on the plate and on the mound, really.
Yeah, I get it. I mean, you are correct on the numbers. There have been more of those. By the way, Trinity Rodman, the goal for the U.S. Women's National Team. So a nice little segue you get to.
Yeah, you had three walks. You had three walks. Like,
oh,
you had one walk.
He's still hung up on
three walks. Come on.
Yeah, it is what it is. All right. While that is going on here in the baseball world, interesting to see how now camps have opened up around the NFL. More than anything, we're just getting some sound, and it's that time of year, late July, hearing different execs, GMs, players make sound bites that we end up talking about. And one of them comes from the AFC East. We're talking Buffalo Bills here today, GM Brandon Bean. I didn't realize this. I've heard, you know, there have been people on our network who've called Josh Allen overrated at quarterback, especially when he throws countless, red zone interceptions. But apparently executives now saying that. And if anything, this is just fuel to the fire here for Brandon Bean. Allen is back. He's presumably 100% healthy, ready to go this year for Buffalo. Here is what Brandon Bean had to say on those latest comments around his quarterback.
Sal, there's idiots everywhere. There are people that did not, we all are well aware when Josh came out, there are people that thought he was a bust or would not make it for all the reasons that they've listed over the years. And I just think anytime someone thinks they got a crack, they're going to say, see, I told you so. They're looking for things. You can look at any player in any sport and point out negatives. No one is God or a robot. But Josh's positives don't even come close to the negatives.
Here's what makes it fascinating, at least for Buffalo this year, Dustin. I just finished up my own power ratings to come into the year. I have Buffalo narrowly third best in the division, yet best quarterback, I would say by far. I don't think it's even close between what you're getting right now, this current iteration of Aaron Rodgers, Tua Tagovailoa, and Josh Allen. If you're comparing the three, it's more the issue not of overrated. That's a ridiculous thing to state with Allen, but it's A, will he be smarter protecting his body running the football, where he has been negligent at best a lot of times, taking needless, unnecessary hits for a guy of his value to his team. But more than anything, what is a receiving core that on paper looks to be more like bottom five in the league when they have a top five quarterback? How will that integration happen when you lose Stephon Diggs and Gabe Davis? That's my big question coming into this year.
Look, let's go deeper into what this team lost. It's not just Stephon Diggs. It's not just Gabe Davis. They lost the heartbeat of that offensive line for a very long time in Mitch Morse. that's going to be a major impact. And then I look on the defensive end. If this is a team that's going to have to throw from behind because there's been a lot of changes on defense, a whole new secondary, headlined by losing Jordan Poyer in division to the Dolphins, Micah Hyde is no longer there. Those two were key components in this Bills turnaround under Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean. I have a lot of questions about what this offense can do if they have to throw from behind. However, I think maybe we get caught up in the minutia of these pieces, right, of these players moving in and out. Because at the end of the day, when it comes to handicapping and looking at these teams, it comes down to, do you trust the head coach? Do you trust the quarterback? I trust the quarterback, and I trust the head coach for the most part. But I do have questions about Sean McDermott, whether he's the guy who can build a foundation to fix things, which he's clearly done, and can he be the guy that gets them over the hump? I have questions about that latter part. I don't know if he's a guy who can get you over the hump and win on the margins. That's my issue there. However, Josh Allen being overrated, I actually think Josh Allen's underappreciated. If you want to look at like accuracy and touch and does he leave something to be desired at times? Absolutely. But there were moments where they were called designed runs for Josh Allen and use his physical abilities where he did things that only Cam Newton did in the NFL before at that size, speed, and ability to make plays. And if you use him right, he will be an MVP candidate. And perhaps now I went from thinking with everything the Bills lost a year ago, Ben, that they're actually underrated now.
You can make a case on that front. We also get into this whole thought of because the big-time plays, the red zone, the crunch-time situations are valued so highly by us as football viewers,
yeah,
we start assigning a player's value to those specific spots. The reality is there is a lot of variance when it comes to red zone situations. It's just how turnover margin varies from the good to the bad year to year, and it's never a consistent predictive thing to counter in and factor to a player's value. Yet Josh Allen, he's had a couple of years now where it's been amidst the worst, and you don't want to just say it's luck because that's not into it. It's been really poor decisions at a lot of times in these red zone spots. But as a guy gets older, as a guy becomes such a focal part of the franchise and is now more trusted in those situations, you have to naturally believe, just based on the numbers, that Allen is only going to get better in those types of spots when you are in the red zone, when you are in the sorts of plays that dictate a game. That's where it comes into when all the thought and the talking process around Allen is always overrated because of a few bad plays in the red zone. But you're assuming, and with good reason to assume because of what he has proven to do over time, you are assuming better production in those specific spots. Well, all of a sudden, it really can make an argument for flipping the pendulum.
I totally agree. We'll see how it plays out. I think there's going to be a different approach from Buffalo this year. Lean on the front for that defense to keep them in games. And they're looking for Josh Allen to make plays in key moments to win games. And the question is, does he have a go-to guy to help him there?
10.5 on that win total. Heavy juice right now to the under. Stuart Durst going to join us up next. Talk some of his NFL futures and Olympic basketball on the other side.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Thursday edition of Sharp Money as we welcome you back. Bar Canada at the D. It is official, even though Dustin Sweetelson does not really acknowledge its existence or care. But Dylan Cease has thrown a no-hitter for the San Diego Padres, second in San Diego history. Cease does it in just over 110 pitches, despite three walks. Padres, three, Nationals, nothing. This is what, no-hitter number 360 what?
24.
Oh, 324.
How many perfect games do you think there were in history of baseball?
Less than 50.
24. So 300 less.
Exactly 300 less.
So 24 of those no-hit, 324 no-hitters were perfect games. That means there's been 300 just no-hitters.
So you don't think that's an impressive accomplishment?
He has three walks! That might as well be hits.
You imagine losing a walk prop. You're like, oh, I like Cease today. There's 19 different ways to bet pitchers now if you like them. Let me bet the walk prop under. Guy throws a no-hitter.
Yeah,
he loses the walk prop.
That's the frustrator, and we'll talk to Stuart Durst about this now because he handicaps a lot of baseball props. The frustration sometimes is I know I like a pitcher today, but finding the right avenue to back them is always a difficult process.
And you start looking at it of if you ladder and there are so many options, all of a sudden you're getting so in deep and it's a single game. You don't want to allocate that much bankroll. Regardless, Dylan Cease Congratulations to him. I still think that's a big accomplishment. It's a no-hitter, for crying out loud. I don't care about
the three
walks.
There'll be another one in probably 3 weeks.
Don't tell that to Padre fans. Second one in franchise history as Cease gets it done against Washington. With that, we will welcome in Stuart Durst, who does have his camo Nats hat on for us today. We go out to the progressive guest line. Tough one for the Nats today, Stuart. But that is actually a really fascinating topic that Dustin and I mean, we're betting baseball and betting props specifically pretty much every day. I'm sure you watched a good amount of that Cease start today. Where is the threshold for you as you've broken down some of these props?
Yeah, well, I will say, you guys made me think of it. One of the best things to look at, I think, in general is pitches per plate appearance. If you're betting the walks, if you're betting the strikeouts a lot, right, guys that really fill up the strike zone and they throw strikes and they're aggressive, those are the guys you always want to go for the outs props, right? Because their pitches per plate appearance are going to be as low as possible. They're keeping the ball in play and they're trying to get out there and get outs. I think Cease, and the reason that he's so dominant is he can not only get the ball on the ground, but he then has the dominant K stuff, right? We're talking about elite level whiff percentages in the league. So he's one of the few guys that can mix it up. Obviously, I got my Nats hat on. Wasn't too impressive for the Nationals today, but yeah. I'm not sure anyone out there in the world had Nats money line, to be completely honest.
Sure thing. If you're wondering where the Cease odds went, especially if you're Dustin and you have a Cease NL Cy Young Award ticket, 35-1 to 30-1, Dustin.
Well, here's the part that makes me feel bad on the inside is the current number after the movement following the no-hitter is actually better than the number I bet before the season started. So, no, I will not be going back in on the Dylan Cease Cy Young market, Okay. Even though I believed in it before the season started. All right, I want to move to the Olympics, Stuart, because I've loosely been following Team USA in the turmoil. Now they have to turn it on in the last couple minutes all the time. And you are someone who bets everything. You're on top of all these sports. When you're watching the Olympics so far, just a general overview, what has stood out to you that's kind of been surprising about the way these games have played out outside of just the U.S. not really having a cohesive unit?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where I think we're seeing elite guard play is really kind of the most important thing possible. Self-creation is really what I'm looking for the most, whether you're betting on props or whether you're betting on teams. Let's look at a team like France. They got all the defense in the world, but there's a reason they're not favored to win this tournament. They don't have any self-creators, right? You're betting on a guy like Evan Fournier to carry the team forward. So as we get deeper and deeper into this tournament, I think the teams that have the true self-creators, the guy that can make their own shot, that can persevere through a packed paint, are going to be the ones that really take their teams kind of deep in this tournament. I think the biggest thing, you obviously mentioned it, it's the easy way out with the United States. It's cohesion. This team is not playing together. They do not look comfortable out there. But at the end of the day, it's pretty hard to bet against them, and the odds show it themselves.
Yeah, with the USA overwhelming favorites over $5 to win the tournament, which begins Saturday morning. The group setup, Stuart, is the fascinating part to me because you get USA-Serbia. That's the obvious, very intriguing matchup in Group C. But then Group A is sort of this group of death if you're looking at the next best teams. I mean, you have Canada, Greece, Australia, Spain, who have all had runs of success internationally over the last decade and a half or so. And then France kind of gets this gift group here of Germany, Brazil, Japan. France minus 225 to win Group B there. As we look at Group A in particular, you could make a case for a lot of different outcomes based on how Group A is set up, couldn't you?
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, it's one of those things where we have a lot of different teams that really can pack a punch in this tournament. When you look at the best of the best, when you look at teams playing for their country, that's really when some surprising storylines happen. You even mentioned just a second ago, a team like Germany is a team that I don't necessarily think is getting enough respect when they got multiple guys, a Schroeder, right, a Wagner, both of the Wagner brothers up there can really contribute. And a team like France, like I said, not a lot of offense as well. So it'll be interesting. Keep looking for those self-creators. Those are the teams that are going to stand out.
We are going to look at Group A in particular, too, because we got, I mean, look, Giannis is on a team that is, you know, viewed to be pretty weak, Greece, but, I mean, he's still a Giannis figure. He's going to be making a
difference. You're a Bucks fan. It doesn't bother you he's playing in this when he was hurt at the end of the year? This doesn't matter.
Pride.
The Olympics don't matter. They don't matter. I'm sorry. People get paid to play real sports now. We added real sports into the Olympics. They're mostly exercise events. And all of a sudden we said, no one cares about watching people exercise. So let's add real sports. I can't believe you're on. We'll go back. We'll discuss this later.
We will.
Stuart, Canada, Greece. The Canadians are laying 7 against Greece. What are you going to do with this game?
Yeah, I got two correlated bets in this game. I got Canada -7, and then I got a prop. We're going Giannis Antetokounmpo over 3.5 assists. The reason these two correlate, and really a reason I like this a lot, is because what is the number one way that any team has ever stopped Giannis Antetokounmpo? It is building the biggest wall possible in the paint, getting as many warm bodies possible, and making it as difficult for him. And guess what? We're not in the NBA anymore. We're in international waters, which means no defensive 3 seconds, which means you can pack the paint way better than you can in the NBA. And they don't truly have, you know, a center that's going to be able to stop them. Powell gives you some size, but this Canada team is absolutely filled with defense, like the most annoying defensive players in the league, whether it's a Dylan Brooks, a Lou Dort. These guys are going to be in your face 24/7. I think it's truly going to be one of those games where we make anybody but Giannis beat you. And we know Giannis is very comfortable with the ball in his hands. I think 3.5 is a pretty disrespectful assist number, considering it's going to be up to him to do everything. If you haven't been watching Greece so far, this team fully runs through Giannis. And when it becomes a trickier scoring situation, I think he's going to be forced to kick out and pass more. And then when we look at the defensive side, what does Canada do well? They have fantastic guard play. SGA, Jamal Murray, a ton of guys that dominate in that mid-range. Giannis is going to be in the paint, but I think this is a team that's well-equipped to kind of play around him and take care of business. And I think it's going to be one of those games, probably 10 to 12 point win right here. So I think we're getting some good value on the seven still.
That is the primetime matchup, 3 p.m. Eastern time Saturday, late night there in France, as it is Canada taking on Greece. Stuart Durst with us right now. Follow him at Monotone Football, football with one L, if you don't know that already. I see as well, Stuart, and we'll talk some more Olympics here later on in our show, but I see the Commanders little banner you got behind you. As we transition to some NFL training camps now underway, NFC East, which is where your Commanders here are residing. Commanders, Giants rounding out the odds as far as the NFC East this year. What do you expect as far as hierarchy as we get into a division that has a lot of question marks with it, really from top to bottom this year?
Yeah, no, I mean, I found a futures earlier today that almost made me do a double take, to be honest, looking at this division. It was the Cowboys and the Eagles to finish top two in the NFC East at -130. I mean, truly a number that shocked me. We're talking about an Eagles team and a Cowboys team with win totals of 10.5 and 9.5 being pretty evenly compared to the Giants and the Commanders at 6.5 win totals, right? And you don't have to pick the order. I literally had to check 14
times. This is crazy.
To make sure. I thought it was legitimately Cowboys first, Eagles second. No, it just needs to be the Eagles and the Cowboys in the top two right here. A significant difference, obviously, I have it up on the screen in the win totals right now. So for me, let's break it down a little bit, though. When I do look at this, the number one thing that comes to mind is it needs to be an extreme outlier situation for one of the Cowboys or the Giants to have a season where they're not only in playoff contention, but they're possibly knocking down one of the two top teams in their division. So you want to look for cracks in the two top teams. But to be completely honest, neither of these two teams at the top are paper tigers, right? We got continuity on top of continuity. And that's the first thing I look to kind of dig into. Is this a situation, new quarterback? Do we have a new coaching staff? No, these are the same teams that have finished top two 3 straight seasons in a row. And obviously Washington, a lot of question marks, did not really upgrade that offensive line. Now they're expecting a rookie quarterback to hopefully be sacked at a less historic rate than their rookie quarterback last season. I have no trust in them whatsoever. Then you go look at Daniel Jones, another team, once again, did not upgrade their offensive line that much. 2 bottom 5 offensive lines with really quarterbacks that we can't depend on at all. I don't know if you saw the clip of Daniel Jones and him being roasted by the GM's son, but he was right. You only get one chance at it. You do not want to go into the season with a guy that had the lowest ADOT in the NFL over the last 2 seasons. How is he going to make anything happen downfield with Hyatt, with Neighbors? I don't see it possible. This is a crazy number, right? This is an insane number, and I feel very confidently that both the Cowboys and the Eagles finish top 2 in this division.
Lay -130 for the Eagles and Cowboys in any order to finish top 2 of the NFCs. Great stuff as we go out to break. Stuart Durst, always great to catch up, pal. We'll see you in Vegas in the not-too-distant future. Thanks as always.
Looking forward to it, guys. Let's cash.
Let's talk Giants-Dodgers when we come back. Clayton Kershaw set to return in about 15 minutes. We'll discuss it next.
This This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Right now on our new look website, VSIN.com. Best bets for the rest of the day in horse racing from our guy Mike Somich, Saratoga, Del Mar, all out there. We also have the rest of the day's best bets in Major League Baseball from our Adam Burke, all along with betting splits, exclusive articles, odds by state betting tools, and betting guides. Check it out. Optimized for mobile and a new look at VSIN.com. Back with Dustin Swedelson. I'm Ben Wilson. We are about 15 minutes away from getting Clayton Kershaw's season underway. Big rivalry matchup today here, Dustin. A day after, Robbie Ray comes back off the shelf and looks untouchable. 8 Ks in his first 5 innings, fresh off Tommy John surgery. And naturally, we now wonder for a guy in Clayton Kershaw who's been rehabbing all year. This is Giants-Dodgers coming up today. Kershaw, no out prop set on him, but the case prop is 4.5, heavy juice to the over. What, if anything, can we expect and logically bet on for a guy who we have not seen in real major league action since last year, rehabbing that shoulder injury?
Yeah, Ben, it's tough because yesterday you mentioned Robbie Ray. I went with the Dodgers team total over 4.5. It was even money. I thought it was a good value play on a guy who had one start a year ago in late March. And then he was injured the rest of the season, had surgery. First time coming back. We're talking well over a year later. I thought the Dodgers were the best team in baseball OPS-wise against southpaws. We're going to smash them around. Turns out Robbie Ray had a fantastic start last night in his debut with the Giants. So I don't know what to expect from Clayton Kershaw. Now, they're very different pitchers. Robbie Ray is more of a power guy. He'll rack up the strikeouts. Clayton Kershaw is getting up there in age. We're talking about a guy who's 36 years old, but it's not a normal 36. Like, when they sell you a used car, they'll tell you, no, it's highway miles. It's not highway miles for Clayton Kershaw. This is a guy who's thrown a lot of innings day to day and was readily available for a very long time early in his career. So I don't know what to expect from him. He's 16 years into his major league career, and he's just coming off a major issue that kept him out, where the Dodgers were talking about him being available early in the year. They did not expect it to be late July, and they're just getting Clayton Kershaw back. So I don't know how you bet on anything when it comes to his props after everything I just told you.
The only thing you bet on is the value you're getting with the variance to the negative, and that is
yes,
under 4.5 strikeouts. You're getting plus 130 at DraftKings right now. Shopping around to some other books, you will get good plus money in that range. All of these situations, pitchers coming back off long injury, they're all created individually. They're not just, because Robbie Ray for San Francisco, not even on the same team as Kershaw, goes out and shoves in his first start back. Just because in the same series the next day, another big-name pitcher who's also a lefty has been rehabbing for a while and has experience does not mean he will automatically shove and do the same thing. That's the only way to me you can bet this today, and especially with no out prop. There's no correlative value to assess because it's random. I mean, Kershaw could go 4 innings, throw 60 pitches, and they say, all right, good, call it a day. They can tell us he's got no limitations. He's ready to ramp up. They'll throw him as long as they need be, but we've seen in the past, Dave Roberts has said one thing in press conferences as a manager, but has tended to be very cautious and protective towards his guys, especially pitchers.
I've been complaining a lot today. I know.
You have been.
But let me just add another complaint. I have a lot of issues. One, sportsbooks, when it comes to these pitcher props, just post a number, man.
Yeah, hang them all or don't hang any, right?
Post a number. And don't do this game where you don't post until 30 minutes before first pitch. Post a number. But also, don't give me minus 230 juice on a prop. Move the number then, right? Move it. Give us an ability to play these damn props. It's so frustrating to go and like a number and they have it at minus 230. I'm just not laying that in a player prop. There's too much that can go wrong. But if you move it to the next number, change that VIG, you'll have an opportunity to get my action.
There should be really a threshold where as soon as you get to a certain juice, you have to move the number.
Yeah.
Now, there's no rule. I mean, there's no rule. I'm saying
there should be. No. All the rules are behind the counter. That's
they are
the
all behind the counter.
It's
they can do whatever
rules,
they want.
And they get to change them as they please. That's they'll say, you're lucky we're offering you pitcher props. We don't have to. Okay,
exactly.
Sure.
It's not as bad as all those Bronny James props where the obvious everybody in the world would be just pounding the nose, yet you can only bet the yes. And it was like the dumbest bet you could ever make would be betting any of those yes props being offered on Bronny James right now. And the guy might not even play 15 games, yet alone, will he score 15 points in a single game? Neither here nor there. But
so, people don't know this. Ben, G League announcer.
Yes.
G League Ignite?
G League Ignite.
Pour one out.
All right.
Pour one out.
Yeah. Sorry.
So, when you've seen players in the G League, right, and you compare to what you saw out of Bronny James at USC, I mean, it's very limited, obviously. What we've seen in Summer League out of Bronny James, where would he be on a G League roster for you? Do you see he'd be a second, third, fourth guy? Like, where do you see him in the pecking order of a G League talent?
People have no idea how good the talent is in the G League until you actually watch it day in, day out. Bronny James will not be a player that shows up and is just whipping guys left and right. Like, he will be attacked. He will be exposed for his lack of size, his lack of perimeter shooting. He would not be a second, you know, top two option on a G League team right now. He wouldn't be. That's just the reality. And it, you know, honestly, I say this in all sincerity. The best thing that can happen for Bronny James is to go to El Segundo, go to South Bay, which has historically been one of the best-run G League teams. I've called a bunch of their games when they would come to Vegas, play the Ignite over the last 2 years. That is a really well-run organization G League-wise. Their development is top-notch. They have really good pieces, really good players you're playing around with, a well-curated roster. And you will be exposed. He will be. But he will also grow a ton by actually getting minutes, which will not happen if he actually suits up on the Lakers roster. He's just not going to play. So as much as it is this weird thing to suggest, yeah, he's not ready, I mean, A, he isn't, but B, the G League is the best thing that can happen for Bronny James because people don't realize, doesn't get talked about, nobody watches, ratings are not where they ought to be, and they're not very good, but the talent and the competition is way, way better than he will have had in college.
I thought that's where you're going. I know I pushed us into a different area there. We'll come back to baseball because I do have a bet, though, on this game. But okay. That was a great synopsis.
Every single game I called, there would be at least one guy on one of the two teams you're like, how in the world is this guy not in an NBA roster? Yeah.
And so there,
but it's
that
just guy's the, it's a numbers at, game.
But that guy's – no, that's a Gil Alexander show.
I'm sorry. We're on show.
But we're talking about – so there would be players that pop that you'd probably never heard of that you're like, that guy should be in the NBA jumping out of the gym. Bronny James, outside of a couple highlights in Summer League, and even then, no real signs of him jumping out of the gym and being a guy that your eyeballs are connected to the entire time they're on the floor.
Again, I say that not to rip Bronny James at all. That's just the reality. And that is the logical path towards success for him, is to go that route.
Criticism comes when you put yourself out there. So if you're going to do something like the James family has decided to do with Bronny James and foregoing the rest of his college career to try and be an NBA player, you open yourself up to criticism. It's all fair at that point.
Absolutely. 100%. Anyway, that little segue aside here, you do have a bet on Giants and Dodgers. That's our primary game coming up 4:10 Eastern time with also Logan Webb and on the mound here for San Francisco.
We spent a lot of time on Kershaw. My bet is on Logan Webb because Logan Webb, everyone knows at this point, I'm not breaking any news, he is much better at home than on the road. This game is in Dodger Stadium. So you look at his splits year by year, he's always much better at Oracle Park. I looked at his last three starts at Dodger Stadium. Last one was on April 2nd. He allowed 7 hits. Before that, it was June 18th of 23. He allowed 8 hits. And then 7 hits back on September 5th of 22. His number for hits allowed against this Dodgers lineup is 6.5. I went over 6.5 minus 104. He averages 7.33 hits per game against the Dodgers. And oh, by the way, the Dodgers are offering a bit of a different look here. I get more Ohtani. Why? He's hitting leadoff. And since moving to the leadoff spot, 31 games, Shohei Ohtani's hitting .303, 27 ribbies, and an OPS over 1,000. He's just 3 of 9 lifetime against Webb. But Freddie Freeman, who's hitting third in the lineup today, is 14 of 34. That's a .412 batting average, OPS over 1,000 as well. Because I have those two guys in the top three of this lineup, I think there's an opportunity for Logan Webb over the hits allowed prop against this Dodgers lineup. I backed them last night. They let me down. Please, God, do not let them let me down two nights in a row.
It's baseball. It could never possibly happen, Dustin. A team letting you down two nights in a row. Who would ever think? In a got-to-have-it fantasy matchup, I'm rolling with Webb again, even though I know the numbers aren't good. So I'm kind of just in a hold your nose and I have no choice. Gotta get something out of Webb. Just get a quality start. You know, sprinkle. You know, work around like 8 hits today, Webb, over 6 innings and give up 1 run. I'd be happy with that.
And let me put a bow on Dylan Cease throwing a no-hitter today. Over his last 3 starts, Dylan Cease for the Padres, 3-0. A 0.00 Blutarski ERA. He's allowed 2 hits in 3 starts, 30 strikeouts.
30-1 to win the NL Cy Young.
I have 22-1 from the preseason. I'm not doing it again. Not
it's rough.
I'm not going to go back in I have such a worse number than it is now. It's not happening.
If you could say with certainty, 100% certainty, Paul Skeens was not finishing the rest of the season for Pittsburgh, and you could also say with certainty that Dylan Cease would not obviously pitch to those standards, but would pitch to the sort of standards you thought you were getting in the preseason, it would be a bet worth making. You just can't say either of those things with 100% certainty. That's the issue.
Ben, 2 months ago, I placed several bets on the basis that Paul Skeens wouldn't throw a complete season for the Pirates. And it's blown up in my face, so I'm not doing that anymore.
You're not the only one. I'll say that. Hour in the books here on Sharp Money. Aaron Halterman from Racing Dudes joins us as we come back, talk some college football, NFL futures on the other side.